Hello, folks. Matt here, and thanks for joining us again. This podcast was recorded live on March the 6th at Therapy Live Pelvic Health, and we had such a fun time, we're sending it out raw and unedited. It was amazing to have the level of interaction we received whilst on air, so thank you for all your comments and questions on the day. In fact, the response to this session was so overwhelming that together with the support of Physio Matters, Anna Maria, Becky and I will be presenting a full 90-minute webinar on pregnancy massage on March the 25th, where we'll be being joined by pelvic health experts to really get into the meat of the discussion that we clearly ran out of time for during this particular recording. So if this episode raises questions that you want answers to, come and join us on the 25th of March. Links to tickets will be in the show notes on whatever platform you listen to this on, or you can find links via our social media channels. Facebook, The Massage Collective, @the_massage_collective on Instagram. And we're even braving the world of Twitter now with our individual handles. And yes, recordings will be available for ticket holders who can't join live on the night. But based off this podcast episode, being there live is definitely the way to get the most from it. So with that, I'll now hand over to us. We are now live. So thank you very much for choosing to join us live today. We know that within the Therapy Live rooms, we're up against a bit of stiff competition, particularly over in the menopause room. So thank you very much for joining us today live. We're just going to wait to make sure that people released from the last webinars can quickly choose where they want to go and come and join us. In the meantime, please take a quick look. We are sponsored today by the school, which is us. at the bottom of your screen, you've got a banner with a link to a discounted course with us, where we're going to be exploring a little bit more in depth about some of the topics discussed today. Thank you very much for comments. Hello, Mel. Hello, Heather. And Heather. Oh, we've got two Heathers. Excellent. Right. So without further ado, now that people are definitely in, let's crack on. We're going to attempt to keep to time today. That never happens. And we absolutely want your Q&A coming in thick and fast. We're going to be using the full 45 minutes for Chinwag this morning, and we will be fitting your questions in as appropriate for the live podcast. So don't hold back until the end. Get them in early and we'll go from there.
I love that Matt's capable of dancing before six pints of cider, unlike me. So good morning, everybody. We are the Massage Collective, and we produce the Massage Matters podcast, part of the Physio Matters Network. I'm Becky DeMott-Horton, and I'm joined by Anna Maria Mazzieri and Matt Scarsbrook. We are three soft tissue therapists who are sort of found a bit of connection with each other and decided we wanted to talk to everybody about using an evidence-based approach in manual therapy. So today we are going to be taking that exact evidence-informed approach and looking at the use of manual therapy during and post-pregnancy. So I'm going to kick off this morning because I was utterly terrified when we were asked to do this, because I'm going to be very honest and lay my cards on the table and say that since I qualified as a soft tissue therapist, this is an area I have deliberately avoided. I have found it really daunting, and just sort of reading all the literature that's out there and all the information that's out there on the internet, thought, that sounds terrifying and I don't need to be getting involved in that. And when we were asked to speak and I looked at the list of speakers, I just thought, I've got no place here whatsoever. But luckily, Matt and Anna are far better informed than I am. So we thought we'd take that approach, because I'm sure I'm not the only manual therapist, or I hope I'm not the only manual therapist that's been a little bit daunted by treating women who are either pregnant or post-pregnancy and confused by the information that's out there. So we're going to kick off, and I'm going to start by asking Anna Maria why I should be, in fact, embracing pregnancy massage.
Thank you, Becky. We are now going to dive into the mystical and magical world of pregnancy massage, a world where we are going to teach you how to align your energy with the one of the mother's future.
Hold on. Who are you and what have you done with Anna Maria? Becky, I'm not surprised with that kind of crap out as to why it seems quite so intimidating. Okay, so let's be honest. Where are we going with this today?
Oh, yes, it's definitely all shredded in mystery, isn't it? No, jokes aside, Becky, get over it, okay? Because let's put it down there. Because actually, see pregnancy massage as massage with just the modifications of technique and positions like you would do with any other clients that come to you with their own individual needs. In fact, personally, I work extensively with pregnant clients, and I find it an absolute privilege to work with a person when they are in that life-altering time, but also with a fantastically dynamic physiology that the pregnant woman goes through. Also, let's not forget that massage had a long, honorable tradition, like Elaine Stillerman says in her lovely book, Prenatal Massage. If people don't know it, please do get it. It's fantastic. Elaine Stillerman, Prenatal Massage. And she says that it's a long and honorable tradition in a woman's journey to motherhood. In fact, before modern medicine, pregnancy per se was seen as a normal occurrence, but also birth was seen as a normal occurrence, and the pregnancy or the labor was helped by the women in the village who were all coming and joining and supporting the woman through that very special time. And the what now we know as a midwife used to be a woman in the village who used to be more experienced with attending births, and one of her skills was massaging. Obviously, thanks to medicine, women do not die anymore in childbirth. However, the problem that we have found that often that the medicine has brought in a little bit of a over-medicalized and over-pathologized view of pregnancy. So we need to get out of that. We need to get out of that view that is something to be scared of. Is something, of course, we need to be cautious. Of course, we need to be aware of the person, like I said before, like we were aware before, but we are aware of other people coming to our clinic. However, the benefit of it the balance the risks, because actually the benefits are tremendous. There is some evidence that massage has a great effect on reducing anxiety, on reducing depression, on improving sleep, which we know during pregnancy, those elements are quite important. So, you know, there are the pains that the woman comes in with because she's uncomfortable. Massage can have a great effect, a great positive effect. So, no. Don't be afraid. It's a very normal state. It's not a condition. I hate when we call it condition. It's a very normal state, and use your massage skills adapted to the person in that particular moment, in that particular context.
So I'm going to address the thing first up that comes up quite often. I found when I'm talking to therapists and trying to do some research myself. So when a woman is pregnant, is massage contraindicated?
So I'll probably jump in on that one. So in the UK and in other countries around the world, but you know, predominantly in the UK, massage of pregnant ladies is contraindicated in the first 12 weeks. Okay, but I want to be really, really clear as to why that is and where that's come from. So that is not because anything that you can do with your hands is going to have any material impact on the lady's physiology or the fetus. It isn't. It is because there is, unfortunately, a generally high incidence of miscarriage in those first 12 weeks. Now, Tommy's is a charity that specializes in giving advice in miscarriage and stillbirth, and they estimate that one in four pregnancies will end in a miscarriage. Okay, so that is remarkably high. The good news is that it appears from the research that after about 6 weeks ish, when the heart starts beating, then that risk actually drops to as low as 10%. So there's a big drop off after the first 6 weeks. However, because miscarriages do happen, and because they are really distressful events anyway, what we don't want is any risk of a connection, even fleetingly, being made by either the therapist or the client that the massage received was in any way implicated in perhaps a subsequent miscarriage. It's not fair on you as a therapist, and it certainly isn't fair on the client either. So that's the rationale behind why massage is currently contraindicated in that first trimester.
I have a couple of queries with that, though. I would argue, by doing that, one, are we actually violating the Equality Act? So we know that the Equality Act protects people from discrimination because of age, disability, gender, pregnancy, and maternity. So a person discriminates against, in this case, a pregnant woman, if he treats her unfavorably, even if with good intentions. It is, however, we know that it's lawful for a service provider to refuse a service or to treat someone differently if there are health and safety reasons. However, because there is absolutely no evidence to show that there are health and safety issues with the first trimester, I would argue that by refusing the woman treatment, we might be violating the Equality Act, one. Second, is that an ethical violation? It kind of reduces the principles of autonomy and the individual decision making of the person, isn't it?
Yeah. When you know, these issues that you've raised, I think are actually really fascinating, and to a certain extent they are much larger than we're going to solve on the podcast. Sure. I mean, I'd love to think we instantly solve national and global problems through our witterings, but that's highly unlikely to happen. But I think posing it in that way really, really should help massage therapists think about the clinical reasoning that they may have behind anything they've been told previously about pregnancy massage, full stop. Because as you say, there is no link, and actually, because there's no evidence suggesting that massage is a danger to the health of mother or child in that first trimester, is it likely to be anywhere else? I think it's an area that the industry probably needs to take a look at more widely.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, and again, I think it some of the nervousness in therapists, certainly for myself, has come from that. positions like that that the industry has taken. You know, if it's contraindicated in the first 12 weeks, do I want to start sort of treating her differently at 13 weeks? It's one of those things that puts that nervousness in mind. And also, I guess, like Anna says, it's all around that pathologizing of pregnancy, isn't it? From us taking a position that, you know, massage is contraindicated in the first 12 weeks, we're changing the way we view a woman and her body and how resilient it is. And I'm now suddenly panicking that my magic scary hands will do something awful.
Yeah, indeed. You're actually giving the idea that with your hands, you have some amazing power to change something so resilient that is the body. And I'm seeing lovely Granny. I can actually hear her beautiful accent when she says, you can have sex during first trimester, which is a rather more invasive than massage. So absolutely.
Unless you happen to hear the massage discussion I was having earlier, just saying.
That's a apparently some massages are more invasive.
But I am hoping that question has, I mean, we've got a couple of questions coming in, which is fantastic. And Zoe Nelson asked, was making the point about massage, is it contraindicated or not? Can we say that there is actually a higher risk? And I think, Zoe, the answer is no, we can't say it's a higher risk. However, from a teaching perspective in the UK, that is what is taught currently, that it is contraindicated in those first 12 weeks. And what we're saying is perhaps that does need to change.
Yeah, and Fiona's made the point there as well. Same with exercise classes, isn't it? You know, women are advised to avoid exercise classes in their first 12 weeks. And it's all, for me, it's all that kind of approach of just wrapping this woman up in cotton wool for 12 weeks because she's suddenly so fragile. So what I'm hearing from you guys and what, you know, you were trying to explain to me in the build up to this, and what does make sense to me is that we've certainly as a culture, I think, been guilty of pathologizing pregnancy and suddenly treating a woman very differently as soon as she's pregnant, which, Anna, as you point out, has not been the case for most of human history. And what we're actually talking about here, what it really comes back to, is person-centered care, isn't it? Is that this pregnant lady is a person, is a client. And in fact, what we need to be looking at is why she's coming to us for treatment, what her goals, what her aims are, what frustrations are happening in her life at the moment, what pain she's suffering, the same way as we would any other client, taking into consideration their medical history.
It is something that I find as not a female, admittedly, but what I find really, really interesting is that, particularly modern healthcare moving towards more narrative-based medicine, looking at taking far more from the client's story and background than perhaps from purely objective measures from the therapist or medical professional involved. I can't say, oh, I'm treating a fat person next. I might say I'm treating an amputee, but again, it's actually I'm treating someone who's had an amputation. Why is it acceptable that I'm treating a pregnant woman? Why is it not? I'm treating a lady, and that actually one of the
context,
the history. Yeah, the context that I'm treating her in is that she is pregnant. In the same way that if someone came in with a muscle strain, the context is they've injured themselves, but they're not an injury. They are a person with an injury. and if anything, I would argue that the pregnancy is probably common enough now that pathologizing it. You know, it is actually normal for 50% of the population for a good, what, third of their lives to sort of, you know, be in a state where pregnancy is totally normal. And yet we seem to run for the hills.
Again, yeah, Matt, absolutely. It's about that person. The person might want to be identified as a pregnant woman, so they might want to identify the identity of it, which is wonderful, and lots of pregnant women do. But I also have a lot of pregnant women that they don't want to be identified only as the bump. They actually, they want to be the person, you know, that comes to the clinic for whatever treatment, whatever needs, and at the specific moment, and not just as a woman who carries the bump, and they therefore all their identity is now being lost through that.
And I just want to pick up, because Ernest has picked me up on, he's just hit the nail on the head with the hypocrisy of my nervousness around this. He said, Becky, what happened to your phrase that massage makes you feel better? Surely a pregnant lady deserves to feel better during that time. I completely agree, Ernest. And it's, and this has been my, this is why it's been so nice to do this and prepare this with Anna and Matt, because it's made me just readjust my position on it. And actually see the sadness in how nervous I've been made to feel about this by, I suppose, society as a whole, because I, you know, I, to put it into context, I don't have children myself. I've not been through pregnancy. So it's something that I feel I don't know a huge amount about, which is wrong, because obviously you can not go through it and still be knowledgeable about it. But it's an area that I felt nervousness around. But absolutely, Ernest, it's meant that I've actually sort of contradicted my own position on massage, because I've got myself in a bit of a tiz over it, if you like.
Here's an interesting one. Just a very quick question I'm going to throw in here, because I think it fits at this point. So quick, short, sharp answer on this one. But Lucy Black has asked, on the basis that a lot of women don't actually find out that they're pregnant, in particularly in those first 6 weeks that Tommy's are suggesting are the most risky, and then even up to 12 weeks or even further on, that mothers can be unaware that they're pregnant. And particularly if they are having regular exercise, regular massages, certain foods are contraindicated. We're not getting into the nutrition side, but as a general theme, do you think we're being a bit too cautious? And interestingly, do you think it's the legal positions around it that make us cautious?
Yeah, I think I've seen the talk in the comments. I think the litigation side of things is a factor. I think also just, from my perspective, it's as well the type of people that tend to be massage therapists are caring individuals that want to help people. And they're so, it would be so awful for them to do something that they see as detrimental to their client, that perhaps that, you know, makes them a bit overcautious in this situation. You know, and I've had it myself. I know when my sister was pregnant, I was really torn, because I was like, she's really struggling. She just aches and pains that pregnant ladies get. But I was too nervous to give her a massage, because she had some fertility issues and the pregnancy was hard won, if you like. And I was so terrified of doing anything that might put that at risk that I was torn both ways. So I think the litigation does come into it, but I think also that just, we want to only ever give benefit to our clients and don't ever want to risk doing anything that might be detrimental.
And the moment in which in the guidelines there is that still, you know, that query over it, you know, not the first 12 months, that little bit of a doubt is not something that you want. That's why I think we must press for changing those guidance, because once the common knowledge is that actually it is safe, very safe. And I pick up on one of the comments here on Fiona. Yes, we're talking about massage. Any other physiotherapy assessment is actually allowed for the first 12 weeks. But from massage perspective, we need to start changing our guidelines.
So I think we've we've nicely summarized why I need to get over myself. What I'd like both of you to do now, if possible, is actually can we dive into some of the evidence there is around what the benefit might be of massage during pregnancy to start with?
So, as I said before, it's actually all reverts back to the evidence of massage in general. Okay, but specific for pregnancy per se, there's been a systematic review done by Tiffany Field that showed that improves sleep, improves mood, anxiety, depression, reduces back pain. You know, and considering that lumbopelvic pain is around 50 to 70% of pregnant women come to you with lumbopelvic pain. So that reduction is good. It's important. So per se, you can actually extrapolate data from other benefits of massage and actually apply it to pregnancy per se. But one of the biggest benefits that has been found consistently in pregnancy massage is reduction of anxiety and reduction of depression, and also as a new mum, that touch between the mother and the child, so baby massage, so the touch with it seems to have a very good benefit on sleep for the baby, but also on growth. So
there as well, actually, a little bit of massage with dad isn't that bad either.
Oh, you just want to get in on it, man.
I couldn't yeah, mum's allowed to massage the baby, but hang on a second.
Absolutely. So we're looking again, we're looking more at the benefit of touch because a woman or a pregnant person will come to you with being supported. So in clinical practice, I find, they come to me for musculoskeletal pain because of the very dynamic physiology during the time, or because they want to pamper themselves, because it's a time in which they feel so special and they want to look after themselves especially, or because they feel they need, they're quite anxious, they're quite concerned, and they feel they need a little bit of support, and they come for massage for those, for the special time to help them relax. And that for me is so therapeutic. You know, too often we think, relaxation massage is, you know, it's not as important as the musculoskeletal. No, that for me, more often than not, is a key therapeutic intervention. So yes, there is evidence consistently telling us it helps us in depression, anxiety for the expecting mothers.
Which does jump in, I hope, Tom Mayer, and answer your question, which is when would be the best time during pregnancy to consider massage? So long as your insurance covers you, which is where this 12-week bit kind of comes in at the moment, I would say whenever the pregnant person wants a massage, give them a massage, assuming that they can be comfortable, that you're communicating well with them. Essentially, I don't think timing is a restriction per se. There are practical considerations to make. You know, if literally they are due within the next week or so, then chances are that they're just going to generally feel uncomfortable, and perhaps lying still on a couch for any period of time is actually just not the thing for them to do at that point in time. But they're unlikely to present at your clinic under those circumstances. If a lady in pregnancy presents at the clinic and is otherwise an uncomplicated pregnancy, which we'll come on to and discuss in brief in a moment, then anytime.
Yeah, and I like that point. I can't remember which one of you made it earlier about the autonomy of the woman or the pregnant person at the time as well, because I love that idea that actually, Anna Maria, you said, you know, that she can just come and take some time out for herself. And I know from speaking to a lot of people that have been through pregnancy, you lose a little bit of ownership of your own body, don't you? You know, you're going through a lot of medical examinations, which are often quite invasive. Your body's changing in a way that, you know, that can be quite rapid, like you say. And actually just to come and sort of almost have that connection back, not going into your plinky plonky music from the start, Anna, but that connection with their own body again, and actually say, this is what I want to happen to my body right now. Actually, this is, you know, I want you to massage my feet. But they have that control over that decision, how they position themselves on the couch, just all those things that might be missing from other aspects of their life during that time.
Absolutely, absolutely. So
moving on then slightly, I'm fairly happy now my decisions have been wrong. But if a massage therapist is going to start seeing pregnant people, what do they need to be cautious of? What considerations are there? What do they need to be a little bit more alert for?
So there are certain things that I will want therapists to be more aware, because of the, again, I say dynamic physiology of the pregnant woman and changes that happen. There are certain things that we need to be aware of, so that one, if we pick it up, because they might be coming to us and they think they discuss things with us and they think things are normal, we might think, I think you want to actually mention that to your midwife or to your GP, but also because we might then need to adapt our treatment. So one of the things that we need to be careful about, and especially now with COVID and post-COVID issues, is the DVT, the deep vein thrombosis risk factor. So DVT risk factors are much higher for a pregnant woman. We are talking about 5 to 6 times, according to what research you look, but 5 to 6 times higher than a non-pregnant person. This is because there is, obviously for evolutionary reasons, to prevent the woman to bleed out, there is reduction of clot dissolving properties, at the same time that there is an increase in clot producing factors during pregnancy, again, to prevent the woman bleeding out during birth. So that, you know, you add that with less activity, and if the woman works on it, stand on her feet all day, you know, a little bit more pulling of blood onto the legs. If there were already varicose veins beforehand, again, there is that increased risk. And that increased risk starts from, I think, from the first few weeks, gradually increases over the pregnancy until the peak, 2 to 3 weeks postpartum, and the risk postpartum increases if the person had the C-section, and then it drops and go back to normal physiology or pre-pregnant state after the 12th week. So we need to be careful. What need to be careful are is, so sometimes some DVTs, and pregnant women, the classic ones are saphenous and inguinal vein, can be asymptomatic, so you need to be really, really switched on. But you treat it like you would treat any other clients that comes to the clinic, and they, you might suspect that there is a DVT. So you look for those symptoms, and if there is, if you're doubting, you refer to, obviously you refer for, you send for referral. The Even if, so the problem with DVT is not actually what you're doing with your hands, okay? Because unless you go and do a pretty deep massage onto those cuffs, but deep that the person will be so much in pain, you will not change the clot. You will not break the clot up, okay? So that is not, but when they come to you and they say, "Oh, my calf is painful," and there are some signs and symptoms like redness, heat, swelling, positive dorsiflexion test, you know, and she's pregnant and so on, and you're starting putting all those factors together, and the suspicions is raised that there is a DVT, you refer. Because the risk of the DVT is then pulmonary embolism. But be under no illusion, you cannot with your massage, as I say, unless you go really deep, you break up a clot. So that for me is really important. So not because of what you can do with your hands, but because of what you might be missing if you don't pick it up. Because some women comes to us because they say, oh, I got calf pain, you know, so they're not going to go to the GP for it. They come to you. And so I want that to have considered. The other thing that I like to have considered is the what we used to call pubic symphysis dysfunction, and now we call it pelvic girdle pain. I just come back from listening to Elaine's talk. It was amazing. Her accent, superb as well. And she said, and I totally agree with her, when people come to us with pubic symphysis dysfunction, pelvic girdle pain, it's not a contraindication for us. However, it can be such a debilitating condition. And the person needs to first be validated, but also research is very good on how to help people with pelvic girdle pain. In this perspective, I don't think manual therapy, apart from helping with supporting the person, apart from helping with pain, by itself would be best. I think you need a multidisciplinary team, i.e. physiotherapists, who specializes in pelvic health. So when somebody comes to you and they describe the shooting pain over the pubic symphysis, the radiating pain on the groin, on the back, pain when they move or clicking at the pubic symphysis, or when they are standing on one leg, like going up the stairs, those are the classic symptoms, but it's really debilitating. Work on the client, but do refer to a specialist physio, because by you two together, you can make such a good support system for the client. Instead of just being given, sometimes they're given crutches, sometimes they're said they cannot open the legs because you know, that will make it worse, which it you know, it is true, but there are ways in which you can communicate the same. There are so many type of strategies that can help the person cope, because for some people it starts on the second trimester, and if you have another little toddler around the house, it can be horrific. So those are the two main things I want people to be aware of. However, then you have other cautions. Another caution that I quite like, two things that I quite like actually people to be aware of. One is gestational diabetes. So keep an eye on the symptoms, because again, said that the midwife, especially second and third trimester when gestational diabetes starts coming up, they're going to see the midwife a little bit more often, but they unusual tiredness, the unusual thirstiness, the usual toilets, sometimes it's missed because people need to go to the toilet really often when they're pregnant. Just keep an eye. But the other one, it's about swelling. So very common, third trimester, your feet are going to swell up, your ankles are going to swell up, your hands and your face, especially your face, should not necessarily swell up. And unless you are with your hands down all the time and so on. So those are the signs that you might want to keep an eye on. But said that, third trimester, they will be seeing the midwives much more often, so blood pressure will be taken, because those are signs of preeclampsia, dangerously high blood pressure. And then to finish, the things that we want to keep an eye on, it's keeping her comfortable in the way we position them. So lying on the back at the third trimester, the woman would not like that, because there's going to be compression onto the vena cava. So
very politely put that she wouldn't.
Sorry?
I said that's very politely put that she wouldn't like it. If I'd have suggested
that. But Yeah, when I want to work onto the neck and shoulder, what I do, I put them in what we call a semi-reclining position. So really prop them up on the back, really prop them up on the legs. And what I often do, especially if there is quite a lot of bump, I just prop a little pillow, well, a pillow on the right-hand side so that the person is slightly tilted on the left, so reduces a little bit of pressure onto the vena cava. Otherwise, sitting position, sideline position, make sure that the breast is comfortable. Just prop them up as much as they feel comfortable with. I like if I go another second to go on, Becky. If
go on,
I like,
go on.
Yeah, I exactly. like to, yeah, can I? I like to put a couple of pillows, really, so sideline, a couple of pillows under the, so bottom leg straight, top leg bent, couple of pillows under the top leg. Then I'm going to put a pillow under the abdomen, pillow under the neck, so that the spine is nicely offloaded. The hip, the knees, and the ankles are on the same line, and I get them to hug something nice, like a really nice fluffy pillow in front of the arm, so that the shoulders are nicely stuck on top of each other, so that they it's all offloaded and she feels nice and comfortable. Okay, that's it, made done.
So we have got 6 minutes left, and I'm sure there's some questions as well, Matt. Very, very quickly then, and this is, I mean, this could have been the podcast in itself, post-pregnancy. And I know this, you know, brings into the conversation scar work, which is a whole, again, hours we could do talking on that. So very briefly, Matt, do you want to touch on our considerations with postpartum?
Absolutely. So, again, this is, and everything that we've discussed today is bearing in mind that we're dealing with a non-complicated pregnancy, which is the vast majority, and complicated pregnancies or more complex pregnancies will be under much greater scrutiny from a midwife perspective. So under normal circumstances, assuming no further complications, the normal approach is that the mother has a 6 weeks check where they're checked out by the midwife to make sure that, you know, things like bleeding has stopped and that their function is generally back to normal. Let's assume it's a vaginal birth in this instance. Basically, from that point onwards, there is nothing stopping them going back to normal activities other than just the self-limitations of how they feel. So anything that a mother presents with at that stage, I would obviously be taking into account the fact that they've been recently pregnant, but otherwise treat it like an MSK issue, okay? With a consideration that they have a medical history of recent pregnancy, but otherwise it's MSK. The same applies then for massage. There's likely to be some soreness and some tenderness in different areas, very much depending on how quickly their womb is retracted and how tender their tummy is feeling and things like that. But otherwise, they're an MSK client. In terms of complex birth, then absolutely, that is something that would be under probably more care and more referral between you and either a pelvic health practitioner, physiotherapist, or the lady will actually just be still under medical care and you won't be seeing them. So, you know, chances are of coming across that without any form of referral is quite slim. In terms of work that we can do with clients, so let's go and talk about scar work, because it's something I touched on in my presentation earlier, and I'm going to be touching it only very quickly here because we're down to 3 minutes. But that there is an absolute value in bringing attention to and helping a lady or helping a mother understand and work with her scars. But it has to be done understanding that you are not changing the nature of that scar tissue. Scar tissue is there to protect the person and the body and repair it. What you are doing is you're enabling the surrounding tissues to be as mobile as possible, as early as possible, to influence the longer healing process to try and retain mobility. But let's not kid ourselves here. You're not going to influence that tissue in any greater way than the lady themselves is going to through normal daily movement. So whilst your massage touch may be brilliant for helping reduce anxiety, fear, and distress around the fact that they now have a scar, actually the modifications to the tissues, that comes predominantly from the lady going through ranges of movement.
There is value certainly in moving the scar around to apply any passive load, but absolutely, you know, referring to actually Matt's talk before, and there was exactly that question there. Let's not kid ourselves. You can move the scar, that would be beneficial, but it's beneficial to make the person feeling comfortable with a part of the body, so the person then can stand up, do the functional activity, because only load would actually affect that scar modeling, scar proliferation. And it's really important that we put the point across to our clients, because they cannot think that by coming to us, we change that. Sorry, Becky.
Okay, so we've got a minute left, so I'm gonna wrap things up.
Yeah, wrap things up, Becky.
I appreciate there's been loads of questions that we haven't got to. Matt's screen, you can see all our social media and everything. Come and find us. We'll be around here for the rest of the day. We will answer any questions. Sorry, we didn't get to everything. We are doing an evening going a bit more in depth on this on the 25th of March, which you should have the banner on the bottom of your screen for a discounted price today. But essentially, I think what we're saying is, let's stop pathologizing it. Let's stop seeing just a pregnancy as they walk through the door. And actually, it's no different to the rest of our person-centered care and being a good clinician who is aware of red flags. So thank you so much to everybody who joined us for today. Hope you found this interesting. If you want to know more, come and find us, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye.